Welcome to Today's Homeowner with Danny Lipford, your partner in home improvement. Everyone has questions about their home. We've got the answers, and we have a few laughs along the way. Informative, entertaining, and sometimes off the wall. Home improvement has never been this much fun.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Today's Homeowner Radio Show. Yes, we are set with a lot of great information, and we're going to have a little fun along the way. We've got the most practical, realistic, most current home improvement information you're going to find anywhere. Now, during this hour, we're going to cover a lot of things that might be of interest to you, like wood deck and stain problems. We have a homeowner that stained a deck a while back and it's not performing like they want it to. What can you do at this point? We'll share some ideas all about that. Also, excessive crawl space moisture, that mysterious area under your house. You don't travel in there very much. So what's going on there and what can you do if you're starting to find that you have a problem? We have several ideas on that. Also, tips on building a cover over your patio. If you do this the right way, not only does it make your house look a lot better, it can also be something that can evolve over the years into a screen room, a sunroom, and later on, maybe a complete nice living room. So we've got some good tips on what you need to do and how you need to plan that. Joe, what about that simple solution in a little bit?
Well, Danny, fall, I'm not sure if people are aware of this, but fall is the absolute best time to plant trees. So I thought I'd share a couple of simple solutions on how to make sure that next time you plant the tree, it grows big, strong,
well,
and healthy.
I want to listen to that. I have three trees I'm about to plant in the yard, so I'm going to listen very carefully on that one. And, hey, we want you to reach out to us anytime. We make it very, very easy. The Today's Homeowner Hotline is 800-946-4420, and you can send us an email anytime by going to todayshomeowner.com/ask. Joe, are you a big Halloween person? Do you? I know we've talked before. I assume you don't get many people where you live out in the country dropping by, nor do I. So if someone starts knocking on the door on Halloween night, you really pay attention, don't you?
Yeah, we don't get trick-or-treaters down this far, but a little north of us, half a mile or so north of us, there's a stretch of where the town was first founded, so the houses are a lot closer together. And the elementary school's up there, so they start with a party. When our kids were younger, they'd start with a party there. And it's a lot of fun, especially when the weather's nice. You know, and I think it's supposed to be pretty mild here in Connecticut tomorrow and on Halloween. So, yeah, I mean, I loved it as a kid, didn't you? I mean, I lived in a great neighborhood of lots of houses relatively close together. And it wasn't the most relaxing evening because we would sprint from house to house. I don't know where we thought we were going. But and I learned, probably I was like 10 or 11 years old, and I realized the very best bag to carry to collect all your candy was a pillowcase.
Oh, is that right?
It's big. It doesn't tear. You can throw it over your shoulder, whack your friend with it, and the candy won't come flying. There's a lot of event. My mother wasn't crazy about it, but I love so pillowcase. So share that with your grandkids, especially Gus.
I'm sure it's nice and clean when you bring it back after dragging it around the neighborhood. And
I never really noticed.
Of course, if you have to take a nap, you know you got your pillow there ready with candy, nice and fluffy candy under that.
Hey, that might be the original simple solution.
Maybe so.
How do you use a pillowcase at Halloween?
That's pretty cool.
If we see a sharp rise in pillowcase sales, we can attribute it to this simple solution.
Yeah, but it is cute to see the kids in all of their little costumes. And, we do want to make sure, encourage everybody, make sure the kids can see. I'll tell you, I can always remember, not only could I not see very well, but I also seem to be sweating all the time because the mask right on your face and you've got, you know, potentially a long sleeve type of costume that probably doesn't breathe. And, man, you end up pretty uncomfortable by the end of the day. But you didn't know it because people are throwing candy at you. So what the heck?
That's right. It's always good or throwing candy. Well, I can't imagine why you couldn't see. You had that plastic thing smashed against your face, that little rubber band, and then the nose holes, the breathing holes are like an eighth inch in diameter. I'm surprised kids weren't just passing out.
Yeah, that happens. Well, we hope everybody has a great Halloween, a good safe Halloween, and just make sure, check out all that candy and that kind of thing. Joe, I'll tell you, I'm headed to help my daughter with her new house, my youngest daughter, and I just have had so much fun already before I even get there that I'll be leaving in a little while. Just hearing her excitement of being that first-time homeowner, and she's got her little list, and she wants to make sure she has everything I need there, even asking any ideas or any suggestions that I have for food that I will need. Now, how about that?
Oh,
yeah,
there
food.
You
what
go.
What would you like to drink? What would you like to eat? And, you know, what type of stain should I get? You know, it all rolls right into the same conversation.
starts with the food to get Dad here, and then we'll work on the tools.
I love being bribed.
Did you tell her to get the mayonnaise, the white bread, and the pineapple?
Well, I hadn't sent my request in, but maybe that should be on my list there. But, you know, some of the things we're doing are things that, you know, this townhome that she moved into is very small, and, you know, it's only 4 years old. The previous owner did absolutely nothing, so it looks like it's brand new. And so you have a brand new house. One of the things you rarely have, and one of the projects we're going to do, is to create an overhead shelf in the garage. And, you know, if you do this right and you put it up high enough to where, of course, you'd never bump your head, but low enough that you can still access any of the totes or containers that you have on top, then you have that area underneath where we're going to use for, you know, to hang, you know, shovels and rakes and just a few little things that, and maybe the bicycle and, you know, just the whole theory of getting everything you can off the floor so that you have plenty of room to do what the, you know, garage is designed for and rarely used for. And that's parking a car. So, you know, we'll be able to accomplish all of that. And, of course, I'm not a big fan of actually painting. I like to cut and nail and screw things together. So she and her boyfriend will be doing all of the painting and everything. So usually when I do a project, I'm pretty adamant about cleaning everything up and getting all the tools and things like that. But not when I'm there. Right. I just kind of go to the next project and they have to clean up behind me. So it's, and they're not going to say a thing. So it worked out great for me.
No, you can go straight to the refrigerator and see what she brought you.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And get those pineapple sandwiches out. So that should work out pretty well for us there. But it is kind of cool. We're going to hang a ceiling fan. We're going to install some shelving over a desk area.
Oh, good.
You know, and do a little bit of work outside to kind of set up some things that she needs to do. So anyway, so it should be a pretty fun trip.
Yeah. Does Emily have any kind of outdoor living space in the back, like a patio or a deck?
It's 28 feet wide and 210 feet long.
Okay.
So think about that.
What are we talking about? The property?
28 feet wide by 210 feet long.
Wow.
So, you know, if you throw a football, you need to be pretty accurate or you're going to be crawling the fence.
Yeah.
You know? So it's just this long strip of land they have back there. So anyway, it seems it'll be a lot of fun. And we're going to try to do a little low voltage lighting that'll provide a little security lighting there in the backyard for her. And so it should be a fun trip. And
how many weeks are you going to be there to finish all these projects?
I am packing all of this in. I figure it's going to take about 12 hours.
12 hours?
I'll do a couple hours tonight, and then I'll do a long day tomorrow, and hopefully the next day I won't have to do anything but kind of just rest and get back to town.
So. Good. Well, tell Emily I said hi and congratulations on her new place.
I certainly will. Hey, we always encourage our listeners to send in any little funny story that might have happened to them. You know, a few years back, we did the funniest home improvement story, and we got all kinds of them. Recently, someone sent one in I thought I would share with you here, because we talk about electrical work and how you really need to be comfortable when you're, you know, doing any electrical work around your house.
Right.
This came in from Therese. She says, you know, the funniest home improvement story I have would have to be when I almost electrocuted my husband, John, or should I call him Sparky at this time? He was helping me install a new light fixture, and as we were putting in the new bulbs, one cracked right in half. He grabbed a wrench and was trying to get it out of the switch when, unbeknownst to me, I went ahead and turned on the light switch to see how pretty the lights looked. After a few colorful words, I frantically pushed it down. Thank goodness Sparky is still around for me to be able to tell this tale. So, yeah, let's work together now when you're working on electrical there. And communication's pretty important when you're when you have a switch on that end and electricity on the other end that you're working on.
Yeah, especially if someone has a wrench or a pair of pliers up inside the socket trying to get out that broken bulb. Yeah, you have to make sure that power's off. I mean, the power should have been off anyway before they started doing all this work. That's the very first step, right? Just turn the power out. If you're not sure it's off, Don't work right. on it.
You know, the old simple solution where you take a cut a potato in half and push the potato right. into the broken bulb and back it out is one way. But some people have said over the years that might not be the best because of the moisture in the potato. Another one that we tried one time, which worked pretty well, we all have the water bottle sitting around. You take a water bottle, yeah. an empty water bottle, and take a like a lighter and heat up the drinking part of it, the spout on it, and when it's still red hot, you stick it right to that bulb. It cools off immediately, right. and then you can use that actual empty water bottle to back out the fixture. I did that one time on a ceiling fan, and it worked great. So that's another way to do that a lot
that's
safer.
A good tip.
But still, don't let Therese get on the switch on the other end there. Hey, we're just getting started here on today's Homeowner Radio. I'm Danny Lipford, along with my buddy Joe Truini. Sit back. Relax, because we've got some really cool information that we're going to share with you that I know you'll be able to use at your house right away. You're listening to today's Homeowner Radio.
Here at the Home Depot, we want to help you do big, bigger, even epic. From small tools to earth-moving equipment, we've got your DIY covered, no matter how big or small. And at the Home Depot, you can rent and reserve online and pick up in-store. The Home Depot app, how doers get more done.
So you like improving your home? Me too. Join me, Chelsea, at checkinwithchelsea.com for even more home improvement tips, tricks, and inspiration. I love improving my home and sharing the ups and downs with you so we can all learn together. Every month, I post a new project or how-to video with lots of other DIY posts in between. If I can do it, I know you can too. So drop by checkinwithchelsea.com or follow me on Instagram at checkinginwithchelsea.
Call today's Homeowner Radio anytime, 800-946-4420.
And welcome back to the Today's Homeowner Radio Show, heard coast to coast on some great radio stations like KSAR-FM 92.3 in Salem, Cherokee Village, Arkansas. Special hello to everybody listening in and around that part of Arkansas. We want to hear from you. We make it easy. 1-800-946-4420 is the Today's Homeowner hotline. And you can also send us an email anytime you wish by going to todayshomeowner.com/ask. Right now, we're going to go to a beautiful part of the country, Rhode Island, and Rebecca's on the line. Rebecca, welcome to the show, and tell us what's happening around your house here.
I have a solid colored stain. Pressure treated deck.
Okay.
And it's only been about a year that has been on there. And I go out there now and it's already peeling and splintering up. So I wonder what my options are. Do I have to go over that again once it's maybe pressure washed and with another solid color, or can I use something else?
Well, that's a good question. And it is a kind of a tough answer possibly, because the thing is, if there's anything peeling at all, it does have to be removed. So pressure washing may do that job for the most part, but you still may need to do some scraping, maybe with a putty knife or a paint scraper, and maybe even a little bit of sanding, just so that you get back to a really good, a solid surface that the paint will adhere to. The thing is with a semi-transparent stain, it's designed to soak into the wood. If you have material already on the wood, it's just not going to soak in. It's just not going to perform well. So I'm afraid you would have to go back with a good quality, solid color stain. But if you prepare it well, it should last. I mean, it doesn't seem to last as long as the semi-transparent type stain, but you should be able to get it down enough, buy a good quality one. And I would not go with, there's a product out there called Deck Over. And I have seen a lot of bad situations with that, so don't be tempted to go with something like that. I would just buy a good quality, solid color stain and know that there will be a little maintenance, ahead for you on that.
Okay, thank you. That's my question. So thank you very much for answering that for me.
Okay, sorry we couldn't give you a magic bullet on that one, but it does take a little bit of time to prep that surface. But that's more important than anything because, you know, you want it dry. You want it to be as good as possible for that solid color stain to work. So hopefully it won't be hard to get it prepped up, and you'll have a good success with it. And thanks for being a part of the show today.
Okay, thank you.
Joe, that's exactly why we don't recommend it, you know, in terms of, the semi-transparent, you know, and also, you know, most people build a wood deck because the look of wood, even if it's treated and it's a green color and so forth, it starts graying out pretty quickly. And then if you, you know, let it kind of etch out in the weather a little bit, and then you put the solid color stain on it, and it soaks into the pores of the wood. Once you understand the chemistry behind it, it really is the better way to go.
Yeah, solid color stain is too close to paint. I mean, the difference between semi-transparent and solid color stain is semi-transparent stain has a lot less pigment in it, mm-hmm. where solid color stain is got a lot more pigment. Not quite as much as paint, but a lot more. And that's the surface that blisters off, which is why we never recommend it. And the two other things working against Rebecca is it's way too easy to over-apply solid color stain.
That's right.
Because it's almost like a paint, right? Mm-hmm. You roll it on, you use a pad, whatever, you brush it on, and it's way too easy to put it on too thickly. And of course, all that pigment sits on the surface. And I can almost bet every dollar I own that she didn't, no one does this, back primes deck boards. So now you have moisture passing through the underside of this deck board blistering off whatever's on the top surface. I mean, I'd hate to say it, but if this was my deck, I'd grind it all off. I'd strip it. I'd get down to bare wood and go with it semi-transparent stain. Otherwise, she's going to call us every 2 years with this same problem.
Yeah, it's possible that could happen. I'll tell you, a friend of mine told a story about how he, you know, wasn't aware about this. He said the deck looked so bad that he didn't feel like the semi-transparent stain would work. So he went with solid color stain, and he was talking about how slick it was, you know, that you get, a morning where you have high humidity or you get a little bit of rain. And he told me about this, one of the first, after he redid it, he let it dry a couple weeks, then he had a little get-together. He had about six or eight people over at his house. And, of course, he was the cook, so they were all sitting around out there. He went inside. He had marinated the steaks in a nice little pan.
Right.
And he came out, opened the door. He was talking with them. Came out maybe a little bit too quick and slipped and fell. And the steaks went up in the air and landed on various places of the nicely painted deck. Well, now, if that had happened and your guest didn't see it, then you could kind of scoop them up real quick.
Well, the charcoal will burn that stain right off of the...
Yeah, but when your whole guest look at it and do like that, I didn't ask him what he did from there. I'll bet he said, I have some other steaks inside and took those back
brought
in.
Brought the same ones out.
Just like they would at a restaurant. So, you got to be careful.
Well, Rebecca didn't mention how big this deck is, but of course, the other option is to flip those boards over. Because they're probably not stained on the other side. I mean, that's a lot of work, too. But unscrew them. Hopefully, they're screwed down, not nailed down. But just flip them over, and then you have a nice, clean surface to start with.
And carefully using some of the chemical strippers. There's a lot of strippers out there that are kind of more passive than some of the real caustic ones. And that's an option, too. Though still a lot of work.
Yeah.
But
you have to pressure wash it after, put on this stripper, but...
Exactly. Hate to hear anybody having challenges like that. Hey, let's get to some of our emails. We'd love to get an email from you. You can send one right now at todayshomeowner.com/ask. Christopher in Georgia says, hi, Danny. On a recent episode of your television show, you mentioned a wall product that could be used to create a shower stall instead of using tiles. Can you provide the name of the product? Yeah, that's a wet wall is what it's called. It's a fairly new product. We're pretty impressed with it. It was pretty easy to work with. It's from the Wilson Art Company, and you can go to wetwall.com and find out all about it. But, Joe, that was amazingly easy to work with.
Right.
And I know you probably used, like I have, some of the old tile board that was like a quarter inch thick.
Yep.
And, you'd cut it and put it together with those little rubber sleeves on it. Man, that was just about impossible.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
like, I don't know, putting together a jigsaw puzzle while you're driving down the road. It was pretty tough thing to do. So, Wetwall, I'm sure you saw that we used on Chelsea's bathroom addition.
Yeah, and the big advantage of that over tile is, first, it's a lot quicker and easier and faster. I mean, less expensive to install, but you have basically a surface that's completely waterproof. Where with tile, and we often say, sure, the tile's waterproof, but what about all those grout joints?
That's right, yeah.
You know, not to mention, still, even if they're not leaking water, you still have to clean them. They collect mold and mildew and soap scum, and, you know, so the nice thing is with this is with the wet walls, there are no grout joints.
Right, right, yeah. It was very easy to put together. They had like a little tongue and groove connection. They sent all of the caulk that was necessary. You used an adhesive to make it stick to the wall, and then you use another sealer for any of the little joints that you have here and there. Amazingly easy to put up and a great alternative. A heck of a lot easier and less expensive than going with ceramic. Ceramic has its place, and it does work very well. And, of course, you can't use the wet wall on the floor, and so there's another good place for you to introduce ceramic there, but a lot of different ways. And you can see this exact episode by going to todayshomeowner.com/ranch revival, or you can go to checkinginwithchelsea.com and see all of the entries that she's put in on the different projects we've done around her ranch style home that she bought about a year ago. We've got a lot of work that's already been completed there, but we've got a lot more projects to come with that house.
You can't spend all your time at Emily's house. You have to go to Chelsea's house too.
Have to rotate it around to my three girls to make sure they all get a little bit of home improvement work being done around their places. Hey, we're just getting started here on today's Homeowner Radio. Got a lot of things to share with you. Hey, coming up, we're going to talk about something that you get a lot of different opinions on. What do you do with that crawl space under your house? Do you encapsulate it so that there's no air flowing in there, or do you make sure that the air is flowing? There's a lot of different opinions on that, and we've kind of dug into it quite a bit, and I've seen a lot of success stories, and I've seen a lot of colossal failures, so we'll share with you what we feel here at Today's Homeowner is the best way to approach that kind of mysterious area you have underneath your house. You're listening to Today's Homeowner Radio. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to Today's Homeowner. If there's a tip or piece of advice you may have missed, find it at todayshomeowner.com/radio. Call Today's Homeowner Radio anytime, 800-946-4420.
And welcome back to the Today's Homeowner Radio Show, where it's time for our best new product segment brought to you by The Home Depot. How doers get more done. You know, if you ever tried to tackle some simple plumbing like hooking up a bathroom sink, you know how frustrating it can be to find all the right parts to connect the sink to the drain, not to mention getting the P-trap to line up right between the sink and the drain line. Well, that's what makes this simple drain rubber threaded P-trap drain kit so great. This flexible, continuous rubber pipe does it all, and the only tool you'll need to install it is a pair of scissors to cut it to length. The upper end connects to the tailpiece with a thumb screw clamp, and the lower end uses a threaded connector that slips over the pipe. The rubber is antimicrobial, so it's easy to clean, and because it's continuous, there are fewer opportunities for any leaks to occur. Plus, the flexibility means the trap can fit anywhere, and it's self-plunging. So if that interests you, you might want to head over to HomeDepot.com to secure yours today. That makes things a lot easier. I always wondered why they didn't use more of those. It still gives you the advantage of the P-trap.
Right.
You know, that's has a number of different reasons for that. But here you just have the thumb screw and things like that. That's one of those things that you know, if I was a plumber, I would have one of those handy all the time, because even if it's not a permanent solution, it certainly will address it, you know, right away.
Yeah. I mean, the issue with the PVC and the compression fittings is if they're, first of all, it's easy to when you're threading them, to cross the threads, and then it seems like it's tight, but then it leaks. But also, if something bangs into it, they loosen up, and you know they never line up exactly. So, and this is self-plunging. I'm not even sure what that means. Mm-hmm. Self-plunging plunges itself.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I'm not sure.
We'll have to figure that out.
Hey, let's go to the Today's Homeowner Hotline. We're going to try to help Sherry in Mississippi with the question she has. Sherry, welcome to the show, and tell us what's going on at your house.
Okay, our house is on a crawl space, and we had a drainage problem, so water would get in when it rained. We somewhat fixed the drainage problem. It could be better, but the crawl space is still damp, and the smell from the crawl space is kind of leaking into our house. It's like a musty smell. So I've read a lot about encapsulating, and I was wondering what you thought about that. There's mixed reviews. And also, we laid LVT flooring down last year, and it's buckling in some places. So I don't know if it's maybe caused from the moisture or how it was installed.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, this is something that a lot of people are dealing with. And of course, everything to do with home improvement and your home is kind of opinion-based. So you will get a lot of different opinions. And, you know, I've dealt with a lot of issues. I used to have a home inspection business years ago. So I've been under thousands and thousands of houses. And a lot of them do have problems that people don't even realize with moisture. You can have, you know, situations where your surface drainage is not sufficient and water is being fed under the house when it rains. You can have leaky pipes there that you never even know about that are contributing moisture to it. Or you may just live in an area where the ground has a lot of groundwater to it that will migrate up into the house. Now, the encapsulation, the thing that always bothered me about that, it seems like it's overkill when there's much simpler ways of doing it. Plus, you know, in being in that environment and seeing this large dehumidifier, you've got a big piece of equipment in there that's running virtually 24 hours a day. There's something that bothers me about that, you know, you're that much electricity going into solving the problem when the vast majority of the time, the problem with any excess moisture underneath is one, yes, make sure your drainage does not contribute water under the house by building up around the home so that it diverts the water elsewhere. Make sure your gutters are working right and your downspouts are working along those same lines and moving the water away from the house when it rains. And then the biggest thing is making sure you have adequate ventilation and the foundation vents that should be all the way around the house. A little rule of thumb there would be for every 150 square feet you have on your main floor, you need 1 square foot of venting. So let's say you have 1,500 square feet, you need 15 vents that are approximately 12 inch by 12 inch or the equivalent of. Most of them are more rectangular. And you know, and then the biggest thing and the best thing is to lay plastic right down on the ground. Might want to weight it down with a little gravel here and there, but that just really prevents that moisture. And that's kind of a form of encapsulation, that you're just preventing that moisture from migrating up into the house. You have the adequate ventilation, and 95% of the time, that takes care of any problem. The smell will go away, and you'll be good. So do you know anything about the venting that you have around the perimeter of the home?
Well, I don't think that we have enough vents. I mean, our house is like, it's almost 1,900 square feet.
I see.
So we probably do not have enough vents. I mean, I don't think we do.
Yeah, I was just trying to do a little quick math here. 1,900 divided by 150. Yeah, you would need about, let's see, 1,950 divided. Yeah, looks like about 13 vents that you would need evenly spread around the house. So that would be definitely something that that you would want to look at. You know, another thing, I mean, I dealt with a very severe situation one time that was down, this house was built on the river, and the soil was moist just about all the time. And I'll tell you what we did. We put the plastic down, we put a few extra vents in, and then on one of the vents, we added a little fan, what I call a ring fan. Looks something like you'd have on a radiator on your car. And you position that on the inside with a humidistat. So that way it only ran when the humidity got up to a certain level. It would turn it on and it would move that air out from underneath the foundation, and it did an amazing job in a very, very quick time. So you may check on that as well, but I would encapsulation, in my opinion, is the very last resort.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because it's expensive.
Yeah. Oh, it really is. And I'll tell you, if you don't have the plastic on the ground, that would be the very first thing you do. Not a pleasant thing to put under there, but that alone will reduce the moisture considerably.
Well, I appreciate all your help, but you think that maybe the flooring issue could be caused maybe from the moisture also, or?
Yes, no doubt about it. It definitely is migrating up. And I'll tell you, I'm sure you might want to drop in at todayshomeowner.com because this is an issue that we have dealt with quite a bit. We'll take a break and be right back.
Are you hooked on home improvement? Then take our easy-to-understand practical advice with you wherever you go by downloading the Today's Homeowner podcast. With a fresh new episode every week, you'll always have access to the latest tips, tricks, and answers to your home improvement questions. It's like having Danny Lipford and his crew right there with you while you work. Subscribe to the Today's Homeowner podcast today through your favorite podcast app or visit todayshomeowner.com/podcast to learn more.
Got a project? Tight Bond wood glues are preferred by pro woodworkers more than 7-to-1. Why? Because Tight Bond is professional strength, even stronger than the wood itself. Tight Bond is versatile, perfect for interior and exterior woodworking, and the best choice for home repairs. Tight Bond is tough and durable, outlasting extreme weather conditions and conquering demanding projects. Tight Bond wood glues, the trusted choice for the pro in you.
Is your concrete driveway, sidewalk, or patio looking old and worn? Time and exposure to the elements can cause concrete to flake, discolor, or just look dull. Now you can easily renew your concrete surfaces with Quikrete Recap Concrete Resurfacer at a fraction of the cost of replacing it, and you can do it yourself. Quikrete Recap will give you a durable new finish that will last for years. For more information on Recap, visit Quikrete.com. Quikrete, what America's made of. Gutter Brush is a simple gutter guard I've recommended for years. It's easy. Just slide 3-foot sections of gutter brush into your gutters and leave them there year-round to keep gutters flowing. Right now, they're having their big fall sale, 25% off and free shipping when you order direct at gutterbrush.com. Most homes are protected for just $200 to $300. Visit gutterbrush.com or call 888-397-9433. Prevent clogged gutters and water damage with Gutter Brush. Money back guaranteed, made in the USA. In older homes with old electrical wiring, the hazards you don't see may be the most dangerous ones. Loose wiring connections or damaged wires can cause arcing or sparks that may lead to a fire. The solution is an arc fault circuit interrupter, or AFCI. Leviton offers AFCI outlets and circuit breakers that detect hazardous arc faults and interrupt the power, reducing the likelihood of an electrical fire. Learn more at leviton.com/AFCI. Could your backyard use a makeover? You can create beautiful outdoor living spaces with Rumblestone from Pavestone. Create a paver patio or walkway, garden retaining wall, grill enclosure, fire pit, or even an outdoor kitchen. These rustic building blocks make it easy and they look great. Rumblestone from Pavestone is available at the Home Depot. And be sure to check out the project ideas and how-to videos at pavestone.com. That's pavestone.com.
You're listening to Today's Homeowner Radio. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest.
You know, in a lot of homes, the garage is one of the first things people see when they arrive at your home. It may even be the entrance that most family and friends use to enter your home. So go ahead and make your garage a little more welcoming. And it doesn't have to be complicated. First of all, clean up the clutter. Get rid of anything that you really don't need. Install some shelves or cabinets to get things up off the floor and put a coat of paint on the walls. Now, that's easy enough, but for many, the big challenge is that ugly garage floor. Now, you can cover it with stain or paint to clean it up, but the first time those hot car tires roll over it, the coating will begin to peel, leaving it uglier than it was before. So, for a tougher garage floor coating that's also very pretty, I'd like to suggest you use Terrazzo Decorative Granite Resurfacer from Deitch Coatings. This stuff is actually formulated with real stone, so you're not just slapping paint on the concrete, you're covering it with stone so it can withstand water, salt, chemicals, and scrapes and scratches. But most importantly for your garage, the real stone coating resists hot tire pickup, so it still looks good after you pull that minivan in there a few hundred times. Now, Terrazzo also handles handles freeze and thaw conditions very well and resists mold and mildew. And the kicker is that it's just as easy to apply as paint or stain, and you can complete the entire project in just one weekend. Now, you also may want to add TrackSafe anti-skid sealer, and the garage floor becomes even safer. And when you're done, your garage will have a granite-like finish that lasts for years. And you can find out more information about this coating and other coatings available for your garage by going to DeichCoatings.com, and that's D-A-I-C-H Coatings.com. I have it in my garage and absolutely love it. Right now, we're going to switch gears and head down to Florida. Steve is on the line. Steve, welcome to the show, and tell us what's happening around your house.
Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
Just got a quick question. I'm in the process of planning out a covered patio in my backyard, and I want to extend the gable roof off my house to use as a covered patio, but I'm just not sure beam sizes, spacing, all that kind of stuff, and where to start looking that stuff up.
Okay. Well, this is something I've done hundreds and hundreds of times, and it always turns out very, very nice. Now, the floor, I saw the pictures, but the floor, is that concrete or wood out there?
It's both, and I'm going to rip all that out.
I got you. Okay. Well, you know, how many supports you need, how many columns you need, how big the beam should be, kind of is all the same question, because the more columns you use, the smaller beams you can use. But, you know, I really would recommend on something like this, you've got to have an engineer involved in order to size those beams properly, because you don't want any kind of, you know, deflection later on. But also, you want to see what this thing looks like. And the other picture of what you were shooting for is a fantastic idea in terms of the design. But Joe, don't you think maybe a architect or an architectural designer that could be a little less expensive to at least provide a rendering so that a structural engineer can really size those beams properly?
Yeah, Steve, I assume you're probably going to have to go to the town and get a building permit for this. Is that necessary where you live?
That is correct. I think it's a good idea with the hurricanes we get down here.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're probably going to require an engineer to check off to approve any sign off and any drawings. So that engineer will spec it out. But to give you a rough idea, last time I spec'd some beam to support joists that were about 16 feet long, which I think is what you're planning here, something coming out from the house about 16 feet. It was, and I'm in Connecticut, and the code would probably be different where you are because of the hurricanes, but in any case, a triple 2x12 will span about 9 feet while supporting 16-foot long joists. Obviously, the shorter joists are going to carry less weight, so the span would increase. But that would give you a rough idea. Now, that's a triple 2x12, but these days, you know, I would definitely check some engineered lumber that is rated for outdoor use, because it would be thinner and maybe not even 12 inches tall or 11 and a quarter inches tall. But that would give you a rough idea. You're probably looking at least a 9-foot span, which isn't bad, you know, so you have a post every 8 or 9 feet. And if you wanted to go wider, the engineer might recommend steel, you know, which would be an option. Your outside is, your backyard's wide open. So if you had to get a small crane in there, you could do that. But yeah, regardless, you know, the engineer would probably be needed to sign off on it. And as far as the roof of it, you want to extend that gable on the back of your house, tuck it underneath there if you have enough headroom, because that would save you a lot of trouble to trying to line up those two roof planes. Plus, it'll probably look a little nicer stepping down to that new space that you'll have.
I appreciate that. I never thought about the stepping the roof down. I was planning on trying to meet it up and was trying to figure out how to do that, but I think that look would look really nice back there.
Yeah, I would just tuck it up underneath it.
Well, Steve, that's an exciting project. I know it's going to look great. That's a nice big space that you're planning on, and living down in Florida, you'll get a lot of use out of it. So best of luck on it. If there's anything that you run into that we can help you any other way, just let us know.
Thanks, sir. I appreciate the help, guys.
Okay. All right. Take care. Have a great weekend. You know, I have done so many projects like that where you add on, and I've also seen a lot of projects done like that that were done so poorly just because, it's just a patio roof. Don't worry about it.
Right.
But it always evolves. It just seems that, you know, you start using that area so much, but it's the bugs are bothering me. So
right.
Next thing you know, then the screen comes in, yeah. And then later on, it's a full-fledged room. So it all starts with getting that roof right and making sure that will take care of the room later on.
And the engineer will also spec the foundation he's going to need, because he's going to be supporting quite a bit of weight whatever it is, 36 feet long and 16 feet off the house.
That's right.
So those posts around the outside are going to have to go down pretty deep. Even in Florida, they're going to have to go down pretty deep to support that all that weight.
That's right. You're listening to Today's Homeowner Radio. I'm Danny Lifford, along with my buddy Joe Truini. And coming up, our simple solution. You don't want to miss it. We'll be right back.
Looking to update the look of your fireplace mantle? I've got just what you need at checkinginwithchelsea.com. Just search for fireplace plans for free printable plans. Then watch my how-to video of this simplistic but sophisticated design, and you're on your way to building your own fireplace mantle too. I can't wait to see what you build, so be sure to share your mantles by tagging me on social media. I'm at checkinginwithchelsea. Again, the plans and video are online now at checkinginwithchelsea.com.
In older homes with old electrical wiring, the hazards you don't see may be the most dangerous ones. Loose wiring connections or damaged wires can cause arcing or sparks that may lead to a fire. The solution is an arc fault circuit interrupter, or AFCI. Leviton offers AFCI outlets and circuit breakers that detect hazardous arc faults and interrupt the power, reducing the likelihood of an electrical fire. Learn more at leviton.com/AFCI.
Are you hooked on home improvement? Then take our easy-to-understand practical advice with you wherever you go by downloading the Today's Homeowner podcast. With a fresh new episode every week, you'll always have access to the latest tips, tricks, and answers to your home improvement questions. It's like having Danny Lipford and his crew right there with you while you work. Subscribe to the Today's Homeowner podcast today through your favorite podcast app or visit todayshomeowner.com/podcast to learn more.
Here at the Home Depot, we want to help you do big. Bigger. Even epic. From small tools to earth-moving equipment, we've got your DIY covered. No matter how big or small. And at the Home Depot, you can rent and reserve online and pick up in-store. The Home Depot app. How doers get more done.
You're listening to Today's Homeowner Radio. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest.
Yeah, and welcome back to the show. This is the time of the show where I kind of push it over to Joe and let him share with us a simple solution. Joe, it's all yours.
All right, Danny. Fall is the perfect time to plant trees, so I thought I'd share a simple solution on six quick tips to successfully planting any tree. First, you want to make sure you don't dig the hole too deep or too shallow, which is the most common problem. So you want to measure the height of the root ball. But the important thing is you have to use a little cultivator or trowel to remove some of the dirt from the top of the root ball to expose what's known as the root flare. That's this section where the trunk starts to spread out into the individual roots. So you measure that, then you subtract 2 inches from that height. That is how deep you need to dig the hole, because if you bury that root flare, the tree won't grow as healthily. So then when you start to dig the hole, spread plastic tarp next to where you're digging and shovel the dirt onto the tarp. This just makes it a lot easier to remove the dirt off the grass when you want to put it back in the hole. And then dust the hole with a little super phosphate, which you can get at any hardware store or home center. Just helps promote a healthy root system. Okay, so now you place the tree in the hole and have a helper rotate the tree as you stand back, because believe it or not, every tree has what they call a face, meaning a side of the tree that looks really nice. And you want that ordinarily facing the road. And then once you got it in position, remove the wire basket, use bolt cutter or something like that to remove the wire basket. And then, and this is also important, use the cultivator, like a 3-tine cultivator, to scratch that root ball to loosen up that dirt, because what you're doing is exposing all those tiny roots that'll help the tree grow quickly. All right, now spread some superphosphate and some 3-4-3 fertilizer into the soil pile. Mix it up well. Shovel it around the root ball. And then once the hole is full, form a little 6-inch high curb of soil around the tree, fill it with water, and once that water soaks into the soil, then you can spread out that 6-inch wide curb just to spread out the dirt. Put a little mulch on top to seal in that moisture, and then water it. Now, the easiest way to, you should water it like every day for at least 6 weeks. But a way to do that without having to drag the hose out every day is use drip irrigation bags. If you've not seen, these are just big plastic bags that have little tiny holes on the bottom, and you just tie them to the tree and you fill them with water. And over a course of, depending on the size of the bag, a day or two, it very slowly drips out water so the tree is always hydrated.
There you go. You hate to invest some money and time in planting trees and then see that they don't work very well. So some other great tips right there. Another great simple solution. You can see a lot more of them, over 500 of them, by going to todayshomeowner.com/simple solutions. Also want to remind you about the episode that's playing on the Today's Homeowner television show this week. We're talking about an 80s kitchen update. If you have a kitchen that's kind of stuck in the 80s, you really need to tune in and check out the subway tile that we did in this particular one. And also, it had a laminate, old plastic laminate countertop. It looks just like a high-end stone countertop now, and it only took us a couple hours and about $80 to make it look that way. Also, if you're thinking about adding some recessed lights and you want to go with the LED lights, you would be amazed at how simple that was and what a difference it made to really provide that task lighting that's always needed in an area like a kitchen. So, encourage you to tune in. You can go to todayshomeowner.com to find out exactly where the show airs in your area. Now, if you're listening to the show and the station that you listen to doesn't carry the second hour, don't worry about it. You can go to our website, todayshomeowner.com, so that you can listen to the second hour and you won't miss a thing. And don't forget about the Today's Homeowner podcast. Find out all about it at todayshomeowner.com/podcast. I'm Danny Lippert, along with my co-host, Joe Truini. Thanks for listening to this hour of Today's Homeowner Radio.
Hey, we want to hear from you at Today's Homeowner Radio. Call the Today's Homeowner Hotline anytime, 800-946-4420, or send us an email at todayshomeowner.com/ask. Again, thanks for listening to this hour of Today's Homeowner Radio.